It's going to be a good one tonight, guys. Welcome back to Bioactive Live Q&A. We're here with Marco from Marco is Growing to talk about horizontal living soil. I'm your host, Mark, from MI Beneficials. With me, as always, I've got Brian from Rubber Ducky Isopods, Kevin from OK Calyx, and we got Marco back, the long-awaited return of Marco. Woo-hoo! Back on the waves and here to answer some questions, guys. And that's why we're here tonight. We are going to be talking about horizontal soils. We're going to be talking about lessons learned that Marco, who's been experimenting with this for years now. I saw your post today. You know, you mentioned that there's different ways to grow. There's so many different ways to skin a cat, they like to say. And you found your lane, and that is horizontal soil. And I love that you found your identity. And it's always amazing to find that identity, because then you can go down that rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. You can keep it to that niche in the niche in the niche. So with no further ado, Marco, welcome back, brother. It's great to have you.
Thank you, man.
So excited to talk about horizontal soils with you. Excuse me. Yeah, so why don't we start with the basics for the people that, you know, maybe haven't heard of horizontal soils. Why don't you walk us through what horizontal soils is and kind of what you, how you do it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, great question, man. And, yeah, that's going to be fun. Great to be back, live, you know, kicking it with you guys. And yeah, the horizontal soil, man, like that's something that, you know, I guess before I get into, you know, what's different about horizontal soil, I want to talk about kind of similarities between horizontal and if you just are growing in living soil. You know, if you are a soil grower, in horizontal soil, we're working with three horizons. And basically, we're saying those are kind of like layers of soil. One way to think about it is if you're driving down the highway and you see like alongside the road, they cut the road out. And then you look up and you see kind of in the hill, you see all those different layers of soil. That's just an example of different soil horizons. And when you start looking it up, there's lots of them. You know what I mean? You'll see, you know, first thing you're going to see is most likely if you type it in, they're going to say, do you mean horizontal soil? You know what I mean? So like if you do that, first thing you're going to see is, do you want horizontal soil? No, I don't. I want horizontal soil. The next thing you're going to see is Leighton Morrison's video. And that's really what was the, trigger for me to kind of, you know, go down that horizontal, rabbit hole. You know, I felt like I was already growing really well in soil, you know, and, that was one. I was just like one evening, I was just kind of doing research, looking around the internet, looking for videos. And I saw Leighton's video. And basically, it was interesting because he wasn't talking about like building your soil. He wasn't like saying like, all right, mix gypsum in and mix, you know, this meal and that. It wasn't about building that soil. It was about building that whole horizontal system. And the thing with the horizontal is, you know, when you look it up and you start getting into it, you'll see that it's about those layers, like I was saying. Now, the meat and potatoes of the horizontal system is that A horizon, that middle layer of soil. That's the same soil that you build right and you run in your living soil right now. If you're growing in pots, that's your soil. That's the A horizon. The thing with when you just grow living soil in a pot, with the reservoir or catch tray underneath of it. The reason that can be an issue is, and people, the first thing they say is like perched water table. A lot of times if you're overwatering and you're getting water setting in the bottom of your basin, now that water is going to percolate it up through the soil, meaning it's going to hold inside your soil. You're going to get too much water in your soil. And that's when you can get kind of that perched water table. And what happens is that'll actually get funky in there. Like your bottom of your soil where it's in contact with that water can get really funky, anaerobic, which is not a zone that your plants are going to really want to grow in. And so the difference between when you start getting into the horizontal is I'm taking my main soil that I know that works, it's proven. And now below that, I'm adding another horizon. I'm adding the E horizon. And that is a sand filter layer. that consists of like lava rock, then goes down to smaller rock, pebbles, gravels, and then down to sand. And the very top layer, that will be your sand filter. So that's where the differences come in. And then there's the other horizon, which is your O horizon, which will be your very top layer. That's where your plants are going. That's where, when you think chop and drop, when you think leaves fall in the fall and feed that soil, that's your O horizon. So we're only dealing with three main horizons with horizontal living soil. And it's not that much different than traditional soil, although with that sand filter in there and then focusing on that organic layer, now I feel like you get a lot more kind of diversity in the whole system, as you know, as a whole. And I can pull up you can see, like, yeah, go ahead,
Marco, what was the third layer? I got O, it was just the chop and drop, A, which is the soil, and then what was the one? I think it was sand that you were talking about.
Yeah, so that one, I'll pull it up right quick, Kev. That is your E horizon.
Yeah, and Marco, correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost sounded like you hinted at it a little bit, but the way that Layton likes to explain it, or has explained it, and I've heard him say it, is that E is like almost setting up that E properly is one of the most important things. And of course, it's the foundational layer. So setting it up properly is number one. So I'm sure you're going to talk about that. For sure.
100%. Yeah. So this one here shows you kind of, when you look it up, when you go start doing, you know, your research, like I said, there's lots of different horizons, but we want to focus on three. We want to focus on the O, which is the top layer, organic material. O stands for organic. A doesn't really stand for anything other than I say it stands for like the A team, like your number one soil, like where all the action happens. And then E is alluvial, meaning like bedrock, and where rock breaks and it starts breaking into smaller pieces and graduating up. So we're just trying to emulate that and how it is in nature, where rock erodes, kind of breaks, turns to soil, and organic material drops from the top and get these different horizons. But yes, Mark, the E horizon is your main horizon. Another thing, when you look up this soil, so you'll see my video too here, all right? So that's a good one as well. And I'll just go over to that right quick. And this is not going to be anything, but let me get it set up here, guys. Boom. And this, I'm just going to take you through a little bit here. If you guys can see that there. So this is from my video. So I took a 3x3 grassroots. And I like the living soil beds, the grassroots, because A, they have that plastic liner. Back in the day when I did my first, you know, fabric bed, that was a 65 gallon, just cloth, all pure black cloth bag. Set it all up, poured soil in it, you know, did my thing. I did a super soil at the time when I first set that up. And I had to learn the hard way, like, hey, you got to wrap this thing in poly, because what happens is, it, you know, everyone's learned over the years, if you don't have poly around the edges, you get too dry around the edges. So grassroots kind of built their living soil pots with the liner and that 4-inch breather strip on the bottom, which is key, because that is the thickness that we want our E horizon to be. That sand filter layer, we want to be about the 4-inch thickness to come in right at the top of that, at the top of the breather strip. And then, so starting out with lava rock, you know, that's kind of emulating your loose bedrock. All right, so it's going to take about 3 to 4 bags of lava rock to a 4x4. As you can see, I got that lava rock spread out. And then now this is where I want to go harvest river stone. The lava rock, I use that because it's light, easy to get, and it's got a lot of porosity to it. Now I want to go with some river stones, which are going to be more smaller in size, and they will fill in the voids between all the lava rock, because we kind of want to fill that, even though it's not going to be packed tight to where like it's not breathable. We want to graduate and fill all these little crevices in with the various stones.
And you could use like if you're looking for like a one source shop for something like this, you could probably use like what they call a 3-, which is it's like a 3-inch chunk or 2-inch, even like a 2-, 3-, 4-, but you get like those 3-inch chunks of rock and then everything graded down to basically sand pebbles. So it'll all kind of hopefully chink together, but I'm sure that you probably have to still add some sort of chinking layer. You're working your way down at this point.
Yeah. So we started with the lava and now we're building up. You know what I mean? So now we're going to build up. So now
you're chinking in now.
Yeah. Chinking in the little river stones, the gravels, filling in all those little crevices. Because what we really, and another thing, here's a good look at kind of that. Now you're working in that E horizon. Another thing is your source. That's a good point, Mark. I like natural river stone when I can get it, and usually I can. Look out for crushed stone, because a lot of times pebbles and pea gravel, depending on your region, they'll just tumble them in big, huge tumblers with steel balls, and those will end up leaving particles of metal in your gravel. And you can look at the gravel sometime and you can see metallic pieces in there. So
that's a huge point.
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
Marco, in this system, do you always have to use rock on that E level or E horizon?
Yeah, you definitely want the rock, because as we go, the whole key to the E horizon, and like Mark said, why Leighton says it's so important, is because that sand filter layer, what it does is it filters all your organic particles. The tiniest organic particle will now suspend in that sand. So when you water these beds and then you have your tray, all that organic material leaches down and then it hits that sand layer, and then now it suspends there, and that becomes a zone of very high microbial activity. Roots come down there, do their thing, microbes and all that. And that sand layer is key to make it flat. You kind of want that thing almost a pool table flat on top. The reason being because water, like we all know, water is going to take the path of least resistance. So if you haphazardly do your E horizon and have voids over here and it's not voids over there, what will happen is over time when you water, the water is just going to keep taking that path. It's going to keep going over there and it's going to miss a lot of your bed. We want that water to come down slow, steady, even, hit that sand filter layer, filter out the organic particles, and then just keep settling on down.
So do you take most of your time developing this layer?
Yeah, I mean, that's important. Yeah, get it nice, get it packed good. You see, I got the rake in there.
You still have just pea gravel here, not sand?
Yeah, that's sand there. Now
Now you're adding sand. And what kind of sand are you using?
Yeah, so I like just the same. I like kind of beach sand, desert sand. Just get play sand, anything that's washed sand that's not going to have like for kids, you know what I'm saying, like play sand. And you'll read on it, it says wash sand.
It doesn't stick together. That's the difference in a play sand. I wanted to ask you real quick with that, Marco. A lot of people are now messing with Titan, putting it in there because it breaks down a lot into the sand, and then adding green sand into that mixture, going above and beyond. I wanted to know your particular thoughts on, sometimes it's useless to continue to just try to improve something when Mother Nature figured it out. But some people are saying with the longer versions, if you're really thinking chess moves with this, that you need to add the green sand for certain minerals and microbial life. What are your thoughts on that part?
I do like green sand, man. And I do add that in my, with my build, in my A horizon, that's in my main soil. I haven't really thought about it down in the E horizon, but definitely green sand is key. And anything like that. I like green sand. I like coral sand. You know what I mean? Those coral sands are going to break down, provide slow calcium release, buffer the soil. All those things are good for sure in your soil.
Would you put a mineral rock possibly in that sand, like azomite, or a mixture of something like that? I guess that green sand kind of has the same idea with a lot more minerals in it. But can you mix in things? Like, you know, can you adjust the recipe a bit at this point? If you could, if you can, what would you do?
Well, you can. You know, to me, if you're looking at the sand and the lava rock as a source of nutrient to the plant and wanting to add, then that, to me, you're looking at it wrong. The sand is the filter layer. That is to filter out when you walk. You know how when you we set up a soil, now you that first watering, the second one, you look at the leachate that comes out, looks like mud, right? That's all your inputs. That's all your amendments that you put in your soil. It's all a lot of organic material that wants to come out of that system. That sand filter ensures that everything in that bed stays in that bed. The only thing that you'll see coming out will be some water leaching out, you know, into your tray. And but you don't want all your like you that sand, and that's the key. That's the thing that was the green light for me when I saw Leighton doing it. Like, and you guys know how that is, like in life in general. Like, Kev, you remember when you first heard about IMO3 and that, oh, that heats up. Oh, that's growing microbes. And you said, damn, that light bulb went off. And then when you did it, you're like, oh my goodness, that is so revolutionary. And that's how I felt with that sand layer. Once he turned me onto that sand layer, it made so much sense because I've been there. I've watered so many, you know, soil pots, and I've seen that leachate come out. And even if you got a tray, you still end up with all that organic material kind of in that tray. So I really like the sand filter. I think that's key. And it's more so like a zone of stoppage. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like, the roots all go down there. They don't really go down through the sand, but they go, you know, they'll sit right kind of on top of, down there. And I think as it becomes a zone that's really rich, you know, microbial action down there.
It biochar also suggests, a possibility.
Yeah, I got
is biochar then a possibility.
One thing you can do on top of the sand layer now, I like the reasons I already stated, Leon, I like that packed sand layer and I like it's pretty tight. But now on top of that sand layer, I can do things like logs. I can do things like seashells turned up with cups, you know, like cups. I can do things like bamboo turned up, split bamboo turned up to be like a cup. So that as I'm watering and water comes down, it's going to set in these things like the shells and the,
that is bamboo. An awesome idea. Yeah. That is an awesome little gold nugget right there.
Yep. And a lot of people put the logs, they go ahead and put their, logs at this stage, like their soft wood, all that stuff that we like to collect, Kev, that you're always out in the woods busting up and bringing back. That now's a good time to start putting all that kind of stuff, you know, right on top of this sand filter layer, because that's going to be before your soil. You know, what's coming up next will be your soil. And then here I'm saying go forage. Like when you build your soil, let's say you got a recipe for soil right now, and that's how I was. I had a recipe. It was my own kind of mix. It was a Coots version of a soil, but I made it my own. Any soil that you have right now, if you take that, and now you go to the river and collect sand, silt, go collect clay, add that to that soil equally, you're going to improve that soil. It's just going to improve it. You add an equal amount, sand, silt, clay. You know, because to me, sand, silt, clay is important. That is what makes up your soil. Sand, silt, clay, organic material, and then the microbes that, you know, are in that soil as well. And so I like to go out at this point, I'll go out foraging. For different things. My local river, you know, it's near the, and this is a mud flat. This is one, you see all those little tracks, those are raccoon footprints. So this was a mud flat. All those white things you see over here, those are all shells from freshwater clams that the raccoons come up and eat there. And so when you take a cross section of that mud flat, you can see you got all these different layers of soil, sand, silt, and clay. Within that, and that's a great place to collect. Obviously, clean water.
Is this all still part of the E level? What we're talking about right now that you're going out and gathering, is this still part of the E level that we're working?
No, I've done. We built the E layer, so now I'm gonna build my go ahead and do my A. So within my A, I like to go ahead and collect that sand, silt, and clay, and add some in there with my A. And what that does, see, like here's the thing about what I like, what I'm doing, and why I collect from the river, because you know we got all these soil microbes, right? They're all soil microbes, but there's also water, the aquatic microbes. You know what I mean? They live in the ponds, live in the rivers, live on the rocks, live on the sand. Now, if you only have, you know, focused on terrestrial microbes, you know, that's one. You know, if I add now the river microbes and the sand and the gravel from the river, now I'm increasing that diversity. The ones that don't live will be food for the others. The ones that do live, now I have the strength of the terrestrial and the aquatic kind of in that system. And the what benefits it is the plants. You know, plants are who wins. You know what I mean?
Adds another layer of IMO. Literally. Yeah. Like from a different horizon in nature. Like
exactly.
What are you digging in right there?
That's just adding some a little bit of that. See, because what you want is even though I want that sand filter layer to kind of be flat, I still want to graduate, so I want, when I'm putting in my A, I want to put a little bit of sand on the bottom and kind of make that a blend so it almost fades up into the A, and instead of just being E and then straight A, I like a fade to kind of go up. So that's where I collected some of this and kind of combining this in with that top horizon. This is just sand, silt, clay from the river. So that's where the A and the E are going to meet right there. And so, you know, you see that, you know, that sand, silt, clay has freshwater mussels shells in there. You know what I mean? And think of all the other microbial life that's in there. Even on that mud flat, there was lots of springtails just popping around on that mud flat. And then here I've got kind of that E's done, and that next step is going to be starting my A. But here I want to go ahead and add some things like I mentioned before, like the split bamboo, soft wood. This one I use ginkgo wood. You know what I mean? Like ginkgo's a tree that has properties that 800-year-old ginkgo, they say, has the same property as a 1-year-old. Like it's got a really a healing nature to it, ginkgo tree. So I had some ginkgo wood and I added that in there on the bottom. And that's just kind of like your long property. Yes, sorry, it Marco. Is. Yeah. Well, the ginkgo was from my neighbor, but I got him when he trimmed his tree. I piled it all up on my land, and then I went and got it off my land later. I like to do that. I like to just, if I get some wood, I like it. Give me the wood now, and I'll figure out what I'm going to do with it later kind of thing. You know. So here, yeah, just a little bit of like, you know, soft wood on top of that bamboo. Obviously, that's loaded with, you know, mycelium and all that good stuff that we look for.
Yeah, that's
and,
good.
Yeah, and then so there you kind of just start filling in that soil that you build for your A horizon.
So how deep does this A horizon need to be? The E was, I think you said, 4 inches. And so what does the A do?
Yeah, so the A I like to be, you know, 6 to 8. So that I put you at 10. You know, 6 to 8, you can go, you know, a little deeper with that if you want. You know, the whole bed, I think you only got like 18 total inches. And I like to leave at least 4 inches at the top for the O horizon. Fill in that A. That's your meat and potatoes, that's your soil. And shout out to Virginia Rooted, man. He recently went to the horizontal. He had a bed 4x4, he's running, took everything out of it. Rebuilt it as a horizontal because what he noticed that what he noticed was that his bed was starting to he was losing performance over time, you know. And one thing about, I'll tell you what, this horizontal, man, the reason you don't lose the reason you don't really lose performance is because of the O horizon. And let me reduce this page so we can pull up some other stuff. And so the O horizon. Sorry, guys. Transition. And so that O horizon is where like that's where I refresh my soil. Like every run, I start out with at least 4 inches of a combination of rabbit bedding, leaf mold. I may add gypsum in there. I might add some meals in there, just depending on how the soil was doing. Mostly things that have nitrogen. I want to keep that nitrogen up because I build my soil with those long release, like phosphorus or potassium, are in my soil. Nitrogen is something that's hard to just keep in there. It's very mobile. Everybody will tell you that. And so when I refresh my O horizon, I go heavy with the rabbit poop. I go heavy with the alfalfa from the rabbit bedding. And then I'll mix in, like I said, some other meals and stuff like that in that O horizon. And every run, man, after 8 to veg and then an 8 week flower, 9 week flower, that 4 inches of rabbit and all that is down to nothing. I'm back to my A horizon, which is basically, I'll show you guys right here. I'm pretty much just back to my, that A horizon, right? And if I didn't keep reamending that, I'd lose all that nutrient cycling that's going on.
Which is ideal. Which is ideal because, like, I see that on my Hugel beds every year, honestly. Well, the first 2 years, because I've got one bed that's like 5 years old, one that's three, and one that's two. And on the 2 and the 3 year old, every year, the woody chunks, which would be your A layer, is getting exposed at the end of the year constantly if you're not adding more organic matter. So that's like a great indication, especially if that's being replicated like indoors. That's exactly what you're looking for, obviously. Goes without saying.
Yeah.
But feeding the system.
Hey, yeah.
Marco, would you I'm still just trying to understand this because I don't do this, so I really am trying to understand. In level A, you're adding some of the sand, silt, and clay, the shells, the woods, and things like that. But are you adding anything like compost or a soil mix or anything like that at that level? Or is that considered the O when you start adding like?
Let me pull this back up. Let's look at this one. So the O horizon is organic material. It's the plant you're growing. It's the leaves that fall. And it's the mulch you add to protect your soil. Your A is your soil. That's your soil you got right now. And every bed you got is your A soil. The only difference with this system is I'm focused more on that sand filter layer, building it. Once that's built, the A is built, then where I'm doing all the maintenance is in the O. That's where all the isopods, that's where all the worms, that's where all the shredding is going on. That's where all the nutrient cycling is going on. And that O horizon is where 4 inches goes to zero in 10 weeks because of all the nutrient cycling, because of all the diversity we got in there.
So where are the roots at mainly? What level do the roots mostly at, that O?
Well, the O is 4 inches deep, right? That's what we've said. That's where we chop and drop it are going, the
O's rhizosphere, if you're trying to think of it like soil food web style.
Yeah.
And then the A is where you've, like in your, where you're, with what you're building, you've got all your woody material too. That's kind of like your long-term breakdown too, sitting on.
Long-term breakdown.
Right. So it's where that like middle section of the Hugel culture kind of is, where you've got all sorts of amazing breaking down material kind of chinked in there again and breaking down long term.
Marco,
I don't think it's too difficult. I think you got to just look at sand filter, right? Sand and gravel, your soil, and then mulch, your O horizon. That's three layers. You know what I'm saying? And it's pretty, it's not for everybody. You know what I mean? If you're doing what you're doing and it works, keep doing what you're doing, you know? Because I was doing what I was doing at one point too. And then when something, you know, when something good comes along, you kind of readjust and kind of tweak your style. But if you can get the concept of, if you can remove the concept of your E-Horizon, stop trying to put nutrients in everything, you know what I'm saying? Then you can get a better understanding of it, because where in any soil, in any forest, where the action happens is at the surface, you know? Yep. All these leaves that are falling, if you go walk in the woods right now, all these leaves, when you go walk in the woods again at the beginning of the summer next year, not as many leaves. Like, all those leaves are being cycled down. And all this is trying to do is emulate what's happening out in nature, but on my indoor small scale. And give me more control. Like, if I only grow in one A horizon, like a lot of people have noticed, your soil can run out of steam over time. If you only grow an A horizon and add the O, now adding that O is what's going to keep you cycling those nutrients over and over. You know what I mean? You're going to keep putting that rabbit poop. You're going to get 4 inches. It's going to go down to nothing. And that tells you, oh, damn, that was cycle. Now that's, hey, I need to build that back up, you know? So it's really simple once you kind of get it figured out, the concepts of it. And hopefully we can, you know, get that, get everybody kind of understanding what the concept is.
And kind of along with what you're saying, especially with cannabis and other dynamic accumulators as well, is those surface roots are going to be taking up most of the nutrients and stuff like that. Your deep roots are going to be tapping into the water. They're going to be taking up micronutrients when they're a dynamic accumulator. But it's going to be more on like a secondary basis. It's not certainly not going to fuel the entire plant. It's not going to give it everything it needs. So that top O layer, which is why I feel like the preaching of like defoil, chop and drop, like that, like now we're getting onto it. Like, okay, now, you know, you're getting closer. You know what I mean? You're getting closer. You're mimicking nature. You're understanding the leaves falling. That's why this whole horizon is so compelling. Cause yeah, like that is how nature is. And Leighton talks about, I don't know, I can't remember exactly what it is, but like the pan of the, basically the body, he can go into, or you can go into a farm setting, go onto a new piece of land, considering to building a system like this, or to what you should, how you should go forward with the land that you have and the soil that you have. And you can dig a hole and see where, how deep they were plowing this land, tilling this land. And then you'll find that layer of dead, you know, mass, that black layer, that hard pan layer that doesn't want to let anything through it. And you, that gives you a better understanding of whether you can build on top of it or if you need to start doing more drastic measures. So really cool stuff. And something that I feel like it doesn't get talked enough. Not now. It's not like a fad like no-till is, you know. And if you think about horizontal, think about the fact that you don't have to put another, you know, potentially if you're in an 18-inch soil bed, you don't have to put another 2.5 inches of super expensive soil. Right. If you're buying it, unfortunately, not going to knock it.
That's a good point.
But it's saving you cost there big time. One question that I had just before we move on to community questions, because I know there's a lot of them. And guys, please remember to hit the subscribe, hit the like button, but drop your questions in. That's the whole point of the show, is we're trying to connect you with Marco.
I've got questions.
This is a rare one for us to have the connection with Marco tonight. So, we're going to keep it as long as we can.
Here's a horizon after a run. So like if you see there's bare patches of soil, and this started out with 4 inches of thick rabbit bedding, you know, combined with possibly clays, gypsum, meals, things like that, leaf mold. And I'm telling you what horizontal makes me do, it makes you appreciate the nutrient cycling that's going on. Because just doing some simple numbers, like the top, if you don't put mulch on your bed right now, if you're growing cannabis and you're looking at your soil and there's no mulch and you touch the surface of that soil, usually it's going to be dry, you know, usually. You could lose, that thing could be dry 1.5 to 2 inches deep at the surface without mulch. Well, right now, automatically in a 4x4, you're losing probably 14 gallons of soil that's doing nothing for you. There's no nutrient cycling going on. There's no worms in there because it's dry. There's no isopods, springtails, nothing in there. As soon as I take this that you see right here behind me and put 4 inches of rabbit bedding mulch, now the nutrient cycling happens right here on that surface that we can touch right there with our finger. Now the nutrient cycling happens right here. In this picture, the nutrient cycling is happening down in the soil. So I'm not even taking advantage of my top layer. So seeing that in the run, like seeing that mulch go away, like when you're done with that run and you're like, damn, where's all that, you know, seeing is believing. And that's what's kind of, that to me, that's what drives the horizon, was that old horizon and that chop and drop.
So is there not, is there an idea that you would just constantly refeed the O level instead of just letting it drop down to like that, like you have it right there, which is a good example of letting it all being recycled, but would you want to just constantly kind of keep it at 4 inches?
Yeah, that's a great point, Kev. And that's what I've been doing now. I was going all the way, like go to the end and then re-up, but I noticed that and like towards the end, I'm down to like just dust and there's really not a lot of nutrient cycling going on. So I might as well keep topping it up. And that's what I more or less do now, just keep topping it up with that rabbit bedder. And they, you know, they love it. The beds are very forgiving too. Like we talked about before on our show, Brian, like when I went to Spain, I was gone 2 weeks, not like didn't have anybody touch any bed in my home grow, and got back and surprisingly everything was good. Nothing was dried out, nothing was laying down. The soil looked a little, you know, it was obviously dry, but deep down inside that horizon though, where I got those bamboos and those logs and that way down, you know, that stays really moist in there. That keeps up you know, high populations of microbes in there. So I like the horizonal, man. I think it's a, I've grown, started with hydro, went to soil, you know, tried different types of hydro and end up with super soil and living soil. And to me, that sand filter layer is key. And then just the ease of just only amending that O every time, like, you know, it just becomes a mindset.
It almost seems like you mentioned grassroots, or maybe you didn't, you showed grassroots and that's what you love to use. Yeah. I mean, and I also like using grassroots for multiple reasons in addition to what you mentioned, but it brings an entire new point to that bottom 4-inch layer that's below the plastic, where, you know, when I was running beds with, you know, just traditional pumice mixed soils, you know, super soils, whatever you want to call them, country root soils, build a soil, whatever brand you're using or whatever mix, Coots mix you're using, that kind of principle. I never saw an even runoff on a bed, especially like a 3x3, 4x4, 4x8. It was never like a nice even runoff, nice even level of moisture. And it seems like with the horizontal, all of a sudden, and why there's an importance to that, you mentioned it, that E layer being so flat, is that water will dip and go to the point of least resistance. Same reason you know, if you've ever worked as a barista or packed an espresso, you got to pack it even so the water goes down through it evenly, right? So my only question on that was, before you move up from that bottom layer, that the E layer, are you compacting in any way, shape, or form? Are you just like manually leveling? Are you water, like wetting it down to get it compacted? Like, is there a step there that we're missing before you move up to that, the next level, the A?
That's a good point. It did show in the video wetter. I said wetter down. It was like right out. Yeah. So the sand layer, I like the wet, you know, kind of moisten each layer as you go, because what happened is if you don't ask, and I probably should have mentioned that. Good point, Mark. Moisten that layer, each layer as you go, because if not, it's going to be really hard to get a full, even moisture from top to bottom all in one run. So yeah, wet that sand filter, get it nice and wet, see everything kind of coming out of it. That water actually helps flatten it out too. And then go back in there with your A horizon. But yeah, definitely. Definitely. And what I've noticed also, because I've taken beds apart before, I had a 2x4, 4x2 grass roots that I was, I had a plant die. I usually run three plants in a line because I got it set up kind of lengthwise. So I run three plants in a line. The farthest plant from me died one run, like just like straight up dried up in the middle of the grow. And I'm like, fuck. I was thinking like, damn, do I got like fusarium? Or like, you know, to have something, what's in here? What's up? Is my soil fucked up? And so harvested, ran through that run and said, well, shit, let me run again. So I ran again. And that back plant died again. I'm like, well, damn, if it was something in my soil, all three plants would have died. So I made it through that run. And then I said, well, I'm going to dig in here and find out what's up. So I was going to actually redo the soil. And when I dug in there in that area where that plant was, it was all gray. It looked like an IMO pile, Kevin. Like it was all mycelium. And basically it turned into a huge dry spot. So one thing about these beds, if you start getting a little dry spot and you don't water well, that dry spot can get really big. And it got so big it was killing that one plant in that zone back there. And so that, again, the watering was key, you know, getting an even, smooth, you know, watering into a bed.
How do you water your bed, Marco? You hand water it? You water with a sprayer? You got some kind of awesome setup?
So here's the thing. With the living soil, horizontal living soil, I also added a living reservoir to that. In my main grow. So I took my workshop grow and I built that out. I wanted to do like a little professional, little miniature style grow with everything I know today, like nice dehue, AC, heat, temp, everything, you know what I mean? HEPA filter. And so I got So I added a living reservoir to this system, and this is probably not a good picture, but basically when you build...
Hey, real quick with that picture, I want people that are new to cannabis to see, because the main thing with this is the man is growing with Mother Nature. And so with Mother Nature, you don't see deficiencies like you do when you're trying to do the NPK. And so I just wanted to point that out for beginners, because it is worth learning all this stuff. That's why Marco's taking the time for this. And if you're newer to the channel, I would say, Kevin, you've learned a lot of stuff from Marco and other people out there. But yes, at the same time, Marco's able to take, I think, complex subjects and break it down for like the average grower, or the average, you know, guy taking care of his family, so he can put this shit together and he doesn't have to necessarily Google a bunch of words to try to understand what's going on, especially at the beginning. So those are the receipts in his back. So I didn't want to let that picture go to waste.
And when when you watch Marco, let me say this: when you watch Marco's videos, he doesn't give you a lot of information. He kind of just shows you what he's doing, and then expects you to go look up a little more information. I'm a guy that will give you a lot of information, but I learned from Marco. When I'm glad I learned it from him. You don't need somebody giving you all the information. You just need to go do some attempts. That's what you need. You need little info, and you need to go make tries.
Yeah, make your effort. Man, that's it. Just like, you know, Kev, like, what do you do with acorns? Make IMO3, you know what I mean? Like,
that was all you said, yeah.
Simple. It can be very simple. And so this is the second run on that, on my 4x8. This is my, like, flagship grow or whatever. But I'll show you, this is kind of hard to see, but this is a stainless steel reservoir. It's basically, it's like, I think it came from like a butcher shop. They would load it up with meats, like burnt hamburger meat or something. So it's like a stainless steel basin. And but what you want is any kind of reservoir, because like think about it. You've built your living soil, right? You built your horizontal living soil. How are you watering it? Like, what are you doing with that? Like, and in my, and you know, my home grow, I don't have a living reservoir set up yet. So I just use filtered water. And this grow, like, which I call like kind of my flagship, I built this reservoir. What it has is it's loaded up with different types of stones and rocks, river stones, river gravel, various sizes. Those are all loaded with microbiology and stuff from the river. And so that's piled up in the bottom of this basin. The part you see with plants in there, I got an island in the basin, in the reservoir, because I wanted a living soil also in the basin. Like that is a living soil replica of my 4x8 bed. And the reason I wanted that, I actually wanted that island in the basin. So now I've got a sharing of microbiology. Like I got the aquatic microbes, I got the terrestrial microbes. They're all sharing right there, doing whatever they do. And now when I water that off into my beds, I get a mixture of that aquatic and terrestrial. And when you look in a microscope, a lot of those microbes are the same anyway. If you look at pond scum, you look at some soil, there'll be a lot of them. You'll say, damn, that's the same damn thing, you know, visually. And so I felt like that the plants would benefit from having that access to the aquatic and the terrestrial. The stones and all are just act like kind of like natural filter, natural release of kind of minerals, you know, that kind of thing. Just thinking of like a river or stream, how water runs over stones and stuff like that, and it purifies it. This has a box. This little box here on this side is like a filter loaded up with stones, loaded up with char that I made from my cannabis stalks. And it's pretty much a filter, and you see that hose going in there, so the water comes up from the bottom into this box and then cascades out like a little infinity pool. And I got that on a timer, 1 minute on, I think 4 or 5 minutes off. So it's just a reflow timer, 1 minute flow, 5 minutes off, 1 minute flow, 5 minutes off. And then when I want to water my bed, I have some valves up above, which I can turn, and then now one will go to a sprinkler for the one end of the bed, and then one will go to a hand wand if I want a hand wand. So just added a little bit of automation in there to make it a little...
Yeah, that's that fancy watering I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just little shit, man. Like, you can grow a plant in a solo cup with some soil and get a bud and smoke it, right? There's just levels. It just makes it more fun. You know what I mean? You know, look at what Yellow Skunk's doing.
Also, let's
talk about this, and now he built a fucking amusement park. You know
what I mean? No doubt. The cannabis amusement park.
That's right. Exactly, you got the cannabis amusement park just from seeing, you know, us, you know, doing this and me doing little things like this. And so it's all about mindset, man. It's just thinking, okay, I want to grow these plants. Now I want to control what's going into my plants because I'm going to be consuming it. My friends are going to be consuming it. So I want it to be clean, right? So now I'm just wanting to take more control over things. And now what I did was when I was at the Jadam, I saw Young Seng Cho, and always got to reference Jadam. If you guys want ultra low cost, Jadam is the way. And he said, you know, use your dehu water to water your plants. And the first thing I thought was, man, I don't know, man. You always hear like heavy metals and shit like that. And so I said, let me go test it. So I tested my dehu runoff. No heavy metals, it's clean. And so I said, well, shit, now I don't have to bring water into my system for between the dehu runoff. And then, you know, I haven't had to bring any water into the system. So the system is getting water from the air, from my dehu, pulling it out the air, dropping it into my reservoir. And then now that's just being filtered back through the stones, through the plants on the island. And that's what I use to water my beds. And so within my room, it's all together. Like it's all, you know, one loop right in there. And when you start getting into it, man, like Brian, like with the isopods, like when I first met you, I didn't realize, damn, there's a lot of different isopods, right? There's designer ones, there's fancy ones, and they do a job. Well, now that I'm getting into these reservoirs, there's crabs, which are freshwater crabs, like vampire crabs. They look really, they're tiny crabs, really cool. They live partially on land, partially in the water. There's all kinds of crazy snails, break down, decomp. So now, along with this, you've gone down another rabbit hole. Like, who knew there's all these different little, cool little, beautiful aquatic crabs that now you can have in a freshwater environment in the snail. So, man, it just goes so deep. And the whole thing is, it's about the benefit of the plants. It's for the plants. You know what I mean? That's all it's for.
Out of respect for your time, Marco, we got 15 questions already, brother. So,
all right, yeah, let's get them, man.
Yeah,
my goodness. Quick.
Also, I've always thought of living soil, man, especially what you're talking about, is the, if you've ever heard of an Edelbrock set, if you've ever tripped on mushrooms, you can watch that. It's infinite. So I do feel like you can continue to go down the rabbit hole, and you find out about crabs and different springtails. I mean, in the early days, there was just the white springtails, and I would say in just a few years, there's all kinds of colored ones. You can check those out at Mark's website.
Not to mention fish and all that.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I bought little cheap minnows, the ones you see at PetSmart. They're like 30 cents or something. I just threw them in there. You know what I mean? Let them feel it out, figure it out. I mean, so much. It goes so deep, you know. And it's supposed to be fun. Like, shit, it's a hobby, man. It's fun stuff.
I love that we don't remember how we're joking behind the scenes sometimes with this stuff, people think they invented Mother Nature all of a sudden. Like,
it's their
ferment that's so fire that it's like, right. You know, it's, I think the community as a whole has really risen in the last few years, man. It's pretty cool to see. All right, so Mark Nelson, will my ferments die in the cold like JLF and FTTE, or what do I do with them over the winter?
Yeah, JLFs, I leave them outside, man. JLFs live as long as you can add organic material. I did my own little research. I checked the JLF at like 1 month, 3 months and 6 months, not adding anything. And I noticed that over at the 6 month, all the microbes were gone except for like one. Like there was like one fast moving microbe that was the only thing left. And I came to the conclusion that when you don't feed that JLF for long enough, everything's going to end up, you know, like the tough guys. One guy's going to end up lasting. So just keep feeding them. They can freeze and then in the spring toss back in. I think your, what's the FTTE? I think that's your turkey tail extract, Kev.
Fermented turkey tail extract, yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of my thoughts on that.
I don't know what the, if it had like EM, you know, the trio, the yeast, the lacto, and the purple non-sulfur. You know, I don't know how those react with cold. I'm sure that they slow down and go like dormant, but
well, they're weak anyway.
Yeah, and they don't. I don't think that they would die though in cold, regardless. To be honest, they have to come back. They just go slow. You know.
Yeah.
I keep all my ferments outside. That's where they stay. I just simply don't have a place to keep them inside and room temp and all that, so they just deal with nature.
Yeah, they'll be good out there.
Very good.
And then I think you had a little follow-up with probably for you and Kevin. He's on a well, and I'm on a well in a river. What water is better for my plants? I think you obviously just touched on that a little bit, obviously, with the river rocks and all that.
I'd say well. Just for the filtering and the quality, you know, river, you know, I do harvest from the river. It's downstream from our reservoir of drinking, but did someone dump oil up? You know what I'm saying? Like, did someone dump something? Like, so if you're going to have a choice, I'd go well. I mean, if you,
I agree. You don't ever know what's in a river. There was, I'll give you an example. They were building some new houses by us, and we have, I have that creek that runs by my house. And one day it smelled like raw sewage. We go out there and look at that creek, and it's blue. And they had busted a sewer line that had started leaking and draining, and it found the creek, and it just ran in there. It killed all. There were dead turtles all over the place.
Come on, man.
I called DEA, I think it was. The guy came out there. He walked past my massive cannabis plants, and we had to walk out to the back to where that creek was. And he was like, "Don't worry, I'll find it." And in about 10 days, it was stopped, but. Yeah, that's just my point. That creek flows into the Illinois River. The Arkansas River. I'm sorry, the Arkansas River. And so you get that out of that river, and you're going to get a little bit of that in that water. A well is a coveted thing here in Oklahoma. If you got a well, that's a heck of a thing to have. People love having a well. So I agree, the well is what you want.
Yeah, and just think of all the glyphosate and everything else coming from the runoff from the farms, which is just as bad as what you just mentioned, Kevin. To be honest, it's just like the silent killer, you know?
Oh, yeah. We have acres
of the water.
Totally. We have acres of cornfields that are right on the river, and it's not organic by any means. And all that overflow just goes right into the river source.
Mm-mm-mm.
All right, next question for Rick Easley. Shout out to Rick, man. He's here each and every week, like the first in line, bro. All right, would quartz crystal sand, thought this was pretty interesting, be a good source of silica?
Quartz crystal sand, I don't know, man.
I don't know. I've never used it.
That's an interesting one. Rick's always pushing the envelope, man. Man's
doing always
throw like stuff in the beds and stuff. I appreciate that, Rick. I don't know, brother.
It might be a good source of silica, but the only plant available silica is monosilica, isn't it?
Like horsetails and things like that that come from plants.
There's only one type of silica that's available. So unless it's like on a slow burn basis, it coming from the quartz crystal. I don't know. You'd have to do more research on that.
I was wondering why he's using that quartz crystal sand, if there's some kind of electromagnetism aspect to that.
I'm sure.
That specific sand.
Yeah, have your wife hide a bunch of quartz crystals in one of the pots, man. And I promise you.
I was going to say you might benefit just from the crystal aspect, Brian, like, you know what I mean? Just from that crystal material being in your bed by itself.
Yeah, my mom definitely believes that stuff. It's harder for me sometimes, but I try to get there with some of the things in life. There's another one from Infinity. Do you use rock dust inputs?
Yeah, I do. I do. I like my, from rocks. Yeah, exactly. I don't like too much of like the azomites and things like that. I'm not crazy about some of, you just got to look, man, because some of those, you get a little bit of heavy metals kind of combined in there. And we're talking about, like, obviously beds, which we're closing the loop on. So you got to be really particular about what you bring in. But, yeah, I definitely love my A Horizon. When I build my soil, I use a lot of rock dust for that long-term release.
Yeah, isn't azomite, that comes from one specific location in Utah, and that's it? Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, that's again up to you with your money, but at least the information's out there for you. David, would decomposed granite work for sand?
That sounds good. Yeah, I think that would. I think that sand, it's about the particle size. And so yeah, if it's packing in tight like sand, I think it would be a good way to build that E Horizon.
You probably still want some sand with DG. Actually, I don't know, because they use it for like walkways and stuff like that, and it chinks together nice. So
yeah,
you know, you might be good with just that.
And then, you know, we've got all these principles, man. One of them is use what's available to you. You know what I'm saying? You got to, if that's what's out back, then that's going to be your best option usually.
Especially in the early days, man, you would just use whatever, make a few flips, go buy a fancy light, And in those days, it was the double ender, so you'd waste your money, and then you'd have to then go get a mini split. It was ridiculous, man. That was the endless rabbit hole with money when you didn't know what the hell you were doing.
Yeah.
All right, from Poe, any advice on finding a clean aquatic spot to forage?
Springs, mountain streams. Getting away from folks is the biggest thing. You know, sometimes, like Kev said, you never really know. Like, that happened, right? And that Kev, and that stream, Kev, so that happened. There was a spill. Well, let's say your son grows up. He buys a house right there near you. 20 years from now, you know what I'm saying? You don't never know. It's hard to know what the history of things are. National parks, public parks, state parks, things where areas where you know there's not like agriculture or there's not industrial kind of going on. Look for those. There's actually apps that where you can find springs too, like to fill up your water. Like people do that around here. They go find local springs. So there's a lot of options. Just take your time and don't be in a rush. You know, look on a map. If you see a stream that runs behind your house, look where it comes from. You know, follow it. You know, and you know, things like that. Just using good common sense.
From Mulch at Mike, does crushing up terracotta still have properties of the clay?
That's a good damn question, because I started using, and I thought I had some. It's called it's basically kiln fired clay particles. So it's almost like but it's almost like this just little pieces, and it's made for like the aquarium trade and all that. But it's like it's clay, but it's kiln fired, and I was wondering that too. I'm like, do I still get the benefits of the clay? Like, am I building up my? Damn, I lost my train of thought. I was wondering that. I don't know.
Maybe you know, I think that they have that terracotta in that terra preta. They find pottery pieces that they would use to make it. So I would assume it's got a quality that's useful.
Yeah, it's going to have some good properties. Now, will it be the same as micronized clay? No, microbes aren't going to just start tearing into that terracotta like they would micronized clay, which is tiny dust particles, which are pretty much smaller in size. So, but yeah, definitely I would say beneficial.
I've noticed using that Alaskan humus, if you have weird stuff that you're not sure if you can break it down, It's very expensive and very expensive. The bag itself and then to ship it is very expensive as well. But you don't really need that much to be able to achieve some of that, where I think for whatever reason, man, that the deep, deep forest in Alaska has some stuff that seems to be able to break down a variety of things. Tough clays, Georgia clays and stuff in the early, early days. Shout out to a man named Sticky Lungs. There's just a ton of people out there that I think are figuring these things out using Mother Nature. And some of the community is figuring this out, where I think the outdoor is going to also improve because people are finding more success with it than in the early days where Mother Nature would just kick everybody's ass. So they went indoors and they wanted to stay indoors because it was safer anyway.
I do like it. I like indoors. I like to have that control. Outdoors can kick your ass, man. We only had three.
If you're new too, man, it's like, God, this is stupid. What the hell am I doing?
Right. No doubt.
All right, Marco, what do you use to mulch with?
I like it, man. So just an example, I would do like, I got a little cement mixer that I use for my IMO and whatnot. So I throw in a bunch of rabbit bedding in that. I throw in some micronized clays in that. Turn it up. Throw in some leaf mold in that. And basically what I'm looking at is I want to give food to the microbes, food to the shredders. I want to feed them. I know that they're going to start chowing down on that layer. And so I just want things that are easy for them to get into, like the rabbit bedding. Everybody loves that. And then the micronized clays that we talked about, a little bit of rock dust if I feel like it needs that. But usually I don't. The most I do would be some mulch from the rabbits, leaf molds, IMO. I love my IMO. IMO in this system basically becomes food. Like, you could put 4 inches of IMO in this if you wanted to, and they would eat that IMO the same way as they're eating the bedding of the rabbit bedding. And that's, I love that, man. I mean, that's so cool. Just to have that, like, I call it the horsepower. Like, I put a pan on, y'all might have seen my IG. I just made a pan with some crushed acorns, a little bit of IMO.
So
down, yeah, on the bed of the thing, like an avocado tech. And just in like 3 days, they fucking tore it up and all the worms are gone. You know what I mean? So I think there's a lot more that we can learn from that nutrient cycling and being able to like give it the gas, you know what I mean? And like hit the gas and give it that food and let it keep cranking. Cause yeah, sure. Cannabis will grow without all that, but it seems like you can really push it. If you give it that good food.
The other thing along with that and the importance of keeping that healthy soil, that healthy mulch layer, is with those decomposers, those chompers, part of that system is going to be those predatories, and your springtails, all your micros that are hanging out in the rhizosphere, right? So if you let that layer deplete, then all of a sudden those organisms have to go somewhere, right? So either they're going to go down, and if you're lucky enough to be in a horizontal system where your moisture level is dropping, right? Mm-hmm. So they actually have refuge to find. But if you're not lucky enough and you're in one of those scenarios where you've got hydrophobic pockets where there's nowhere for these guys to go, that's where all of a sudden you see depleting populations of your predatories. And the reason I bring that up is because those are the guys that are going to lend themselves to a really foundational IPM program. So if you don't have those guys, you start losing soil health right from the top. And it's like a good visual representation of that loss. So mulch layer is so important. Because when you start peeling back the mulch layer, that's where all the life is hanging out. That's where all the action's happening. And if you don't have that nutrient cycle, you don't have food coming back into the system. You start running off the tracks in many different ways. And one of those ways is seeing your rove beetles flying away. You know what I mean? You start seeing a rove beetle flying. You can start pretty much knowing that you've got an issue in the soil, and it's usually, if you're not spraying anything caustic on the soil, it's probably what we're talking about right here, where you're not feeding it enough. And I love your system, Marco. Like, that's like avocado tech on crack. You know what I mean? It's like next level, bigger scale avocado tech. Bring everybody to the party because there's plenty of room.
Exactly. I thought about it. I was like, man, you know, bigger bed, they're eating a lot more. Let me just, I don't want to do like 10 avocados. I'll just throw the shit in the pan and see, and they don't give a shit. They like it, you know. I got avocados growing in the bed now from Avocado Tech, just from leaving the pit in there. So, yeah, I mean, it's all good, though.
From CC, suggestions to improve a 3x3 bed with Coots mix and convert over time into a more horizontal style mix.
Yeah. If you want to go fully horizontal, you know, it'd be like digging your soil out and starting over. You know, I have taken my 65 when I wanted to go to a horizontal. I took the 65 and just muscled it into a 100. So I've made a sand filter layer in my 100, and then I took the 65, rolled it bag and all, boom, flat right on top of the sand layer in the 100, and then put my A horizon all around that, and then now the O horizon. So within that 100 gallon, there's a 65, which is my old super soil mix. And so that's, you know what I'm saying, like, that's how much I like the performance. Is I took that old bed and made it a horizontal too. Like right now I've got, this one's a 4x8, and then I've got a double 35 together. It's two 35s. Got the 4x2, I got the 3x3, and I got a 100 gallon round, and I made them all horizontal. You know what I mean? The 100-gallon, the 65, you know, that's, I can't even tell you, that's, I probably made that soil around 2011 or 10, maybe 12. But, like, that's how much it meant to me to go horizontal. I'm like, this shit is such a, it's so, so forgiving. You know, you can leave, you can go away, you can put multiple plants in it. I like running multiple plants, different breeders, different cuts within the same bed, you know what I mean? And see them side by side. It's just a really cool system, man.
And as your skills improve, the pheno hunts are worth it, spending all that money, because as I was noting before, behind him, you can see that you can get a decent look at the genetics as you're developing your eye to this. On what could potentially have success in your grow room. Kevin, I wanted to throw it over to you real quick. You're, I know you're at Friday Night Lights, man. That is like the thing in Oklahoma, baby. So, and you got
to
dip
yeah,
out.
Yeah, it is. Right, yeah, I'll probably have to head out here pretty quick. We'll win, and looks like we're going to be playing again next week. So that's a good thing. But nice. First off, Marco, thank you for being here. It's a pleasure to listen to you talk about these things and educate us as always. So you, appreciate your time, man. You know that. Go to okcalicshop.com. We got the IMO 3 starter packs up. I've still got 1 pound bags of Ultra Bio Boost, which is a product from Terabiotics, and I'm putting that in these IMO 3 starter packs, along with genetics and all kinds of fun stuff. So go check that out, guys. All right, back to the show. I'll be dropping out soon, though.
Peace, Kev.
All right, from Brian, what are you going to use for the tray underneath? I'm trying a pond liner this time. I think it should work well, and I'll have the choice to water from the bottom. I want you to co-sign that, I guess. Yeah,
well, I'm not going to co-sign watering from the bottom at all, because that's just me. I follow nature. I didn't build all this to replicate nature for me to go now water from under the bottom. Reason being, remember, let's go back to the I hate to be redundant, but let's go back to the let's go back to the layers again. Now, where I have that line right, boom, right here, the E horizon, right? That's the top of our sand filter layer. Talking about that perched water table before, what happens is I like to have my tray this deep as well. So I have a tray that deep, right? The thing is, though, I don't want water to be touching the bottom of that A horizon. I don't want that. If I got water setting in this system, it can set in here. That's fine. If you want to keep water setting in there, it's okay. What happens is when the water actually touches the A horizon soil, it pulls it up. So now the bottom becomes waterlogged, like we were saying before. So I really want to water from the top down, and I want to use the tray as my indicator. So now I look down in there. Oh, shit, it's bone dry. Man, everybody's drinking. Everybody's transpiring. Plants are growing really well. If I look in there, oh shit, there's 4 inches of water in there. Now I know I'm encroaching up there on my A. I got too much water. One thing I didn't mention was I put a sump pump since that first original build, my subsequent build, the 4x8 that I just showed y'all, that has a sump pump. It has a 1-inch slope and 8 feet and a sump pump at the low spot. And what that does is now that gives me ultimate control when the plants are small. Sometimes when you're watering these big beds, you end up kind of watering more than the plant can use, and it ends up building up. So now I can take and plug in that sump pump, pump this water either back up to the top of the bed, let it slowly work back down, or I can pump it over into the living reservoir. So that's kind of that in a nutshell.
This next question from Stone Mason. Are you using KNF in your rabbit system, Marco? Do you ferment their feed?
That's a great question. Rabbits are kind of funny with their food. They like it, you know, straight up. Like, they don't like a lot of extra. So I don't ferment the rabbit's food. Now, what I do, and I drop a few drops of LAB in their water, maybe every other week. Just give them a little bit of that, just to get them a little bit of extra LAB up in their system. And then I'm also feeding them things that I'm growing from around my farm too. Like, I give them treats of little, you know, little, grow a little bit of clover, you know, grow a little bit of alfalfa, grow a little bit of, they like honeysuckle actually. When the honeysuckle are fresh, they love those. So I let that grow, chop that for them. So I kind of incorporate good food from around my property. And I buy local organic straw. I mean, local organic hay for them to feed for the most part.
Question from Infinity. Marco, remember saving me recently with ice with my isopod overpopulation. Just needed to reload my mulch, I think he's saying there. It was turning to soil too quick.
That's a great point. And that's what he's saying is, I've seen a lot of people here lately. They have issues with the grays, Brian, like the gray isopods get on their ass and it becomes an issue. One thing about my beds, I'm loaded with all kinds of isopods. I got some from you. I got grays. I got whatever's native. They're all in there. The difference is they don't fuck with my plants because of my thick mulch layer. And that's what I told him. The first thing when people say, man, I got these isopods, I say, I don't even ask now. I just say, I bet you don't run mulch. And they usually come back and say, no, I don't. And so then I say, well, boom, get you a 4-inch mulch layer. Man, isopods would rather be down in that straw. Go to like feed stores, Tractor Supply. Buy the good organic fancy bag of, you know, alfalfa hay or whatever it may be. Use that as your mulch. You know, it's something that you wouldn't buy if you were raising rabbits, right? Because it'd be too expensive. But for one bed, spend you $30. Get you, or you know what I'm saying, or whatever, and get your stuff straight.
And after you do that one time, then you will think it's sacrilegious to get rid of a single fan leaf or your stalks or anything else coming out of that bed, because it can cost you $30 a bag. I mean, like, that's $30 just from defoliating back into your beds consistently.
That's one bottle too, right? I mean, if guys are buying bottles, what's a bottle now? 30, 40, 50 bucks. So
exactly. And then this is also where, like, the whole, I mean, so cover cropping, you know, that's about, like, root exudates and all that fun stuff. But to me, it's also heavily about what we're talking about here and just having organic matter to feed back to the system, to feed back to the mulch layer. Mm-hmm. Like, the just feeding back to the mulch layer, feeding back to the mulch layer. And if all else, all else fails, then the isopods can eat the roots of the cover crops and eat that shit first.
Yeah.
So.
And I do like a cover crop. I'm letting my that kind of form naturally in my big bed. And I've run them before, but when that nutrient cycling is hitting so fast, man, like, those plants suck. Like, I'm not going to keep buying clover seeds. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're getting...
No, don't get me wrong. I know exactly what you're talking about, because you get that matte layer of just beautiful... Like, it's just like the fall. You know what I mean? The fall, you're not seeing plants busting through. But if... I guess in that respect, you know, your first bed, right? Like, if you're starting out, get that stuff going.
Yeah.
And that will end it. And then what I would do from there... Jeez. Is I would let some of the ones that want to grow big and beautiful, let them go big and beautiful, and then defoliate and mulch around those plants. And then, you know, every month, just for fun, just to have something cool growing in the soil. And again, root exudates and all that stuff. You have something to chop off, whack off, and throw back in, and it'll keep growing. 100%. I've done that too.
Yeah. And that's why I put the comfrey in my beds as well.
I love that.
Didn't even like. There's so much. You guys know how it is. There's so many. We can go down so many rabbit holes just in the system.
Yep. Could be edible. Could be radishes, daikons. Yeah, totally.
Yep. I put green beans in there. Just threw it in there, and they ended up growing up on the cord, going up to the HEPA filter, and you know, like whatever. It was up above the lights, and they beamed up. So I took those beans, poked them back in the bed, and now I'm on my second generation of beans, you know, off of one. So doing things like that making those things like a challenge to you as a grower, like, yeah, you're growing your cannabis, but that, yeah, you got that. But now other little stuff's growing in here that you're caring about and you're tending to, that whole soil as a whole just gets so much better, you know what I mean, and diverse. So.
One plant that I had been thinking about and I grew this year outdoors, and I'll see how it does next year, but it's perennial arugula. Mm. And I grew it as a cover in a 65-gallon pot outside, and it is so robust. Like you'd have to have a compelling argument to tell me that that would get matted down by any level of mulch or defoliation. Mm. So I don't know how it would affect, you know what I mean? Like you might have, it might take over. But to me, that's not a problem because again, you're just going to have excessive amounts of organic matter to put back on the bed. So something to consider. It's spicy, right? It's like a spicy arugula. I ate it. I love it. It's more like almost like a radish level of spice to the arugula. So something to consider there too. Just throwing it out there.
Eat, no doubt.
Yeah, we got the last question here for King Dolo. He wants to know what happened to the show. The Brian and Marco show was the best thing to watch as far as cannabis content goes. Nothing came close. I don't have IG, so maybe I missed something. Appreciate that.
Well, that's a good question, man. We're good. Like we were running hard, man. And you know, man, everybody gets busy. I needed a little break, and it ended up that break ended up going a little bit longer, but you know, man, I like the show. I think it was great. I know we ran a little long sometime, and I felt like sometime that was kind of the only thing. You know, people's time was valuable, but I'm glad y'all appreciate it, man. I think it was a good show too, man. And I, you know, we probably should kick it back up, you know, see how it goes. But time's tough, man. It's hard to Mark, you guys know, you guys are diligent on Fridays, because Fridays is usually like, you know, me and my wife, we might do a date night on Friday, you know what I mean? And so you guys have really been diligent on Fridays. So this show and others like it are, you know, holding that torch, man. So, you know what I mean? I can come on here more too, a little bit, and kick it with y'all if y'all want. But the key is shows like this, man. Keep tuning in, and nothing, there was no issues or nothing. No, we, it wasn't no beef or no problems. It's just grown man shit where people just got busy doing things, and it is what it is. That's my answer. Brian, you got an answer for that?
Yeah, I mean, just I would say being very gracious of being on the show and learning. And I saw at the beginning they were saying, like, who would have been the better person to pass the torch to after Leighton Morrison? And they were saying that was you. And I agree with that. So if you're looking at kind of like the evolution of living soil community, this is where it kind of started at, was the Future Cannabis Project in 2020. And beyond. And so as the years go by, producing, especially in the early days, the shows for 3 hours, that's not exactly just 3 hours. Like all of us behind the scenes, that kind of stuff, it's a lot of hours. So in those early days, I didn't have a lot of money, you know, and I was trying to put shit together because I wasn't able to travel. And so I had to put, you know, there was a lot of time and effort that seemed warranted because I learned about something called earned media. And earned media is technically what we're doing right now. Now it's a buzzword and all this shit. But in the early days, nobody said it like that. And so moving forward now, because of the exposures and all this kind of stuff and finding people, businesses and things are moving. So I don't have the time to do that. And that's why I think Marco also sees that as It's not just 3 hours on a Wednesday, and to be able to keep up with that and not get paid for it and have something that could potentially be life-changing for your family. I just am grateful that I was able to learn with Marco live, because again, none of that shit was scripted, man. And I'm very proud of that, because that's a very hard thing to do. It almost feels like in the early days of listening to the early days of hip hop, man, where it was like, man, there's only a few people out there that could sit there and just talk about something for 3 hours and not have to write anything down.
Right.
Yeah, well, man. So it was fun. Definitely not. We're writing down questions. Mark, it's, you know, we had you on the show even in the early days. So that's why I think where a lot of people have full circle, man. So that's what I mean. I think the early days we had the ability to be on here more. And because we've learned from each other so much behind the scenes, great things have happened. Like when I first started the show, I had two children. Since Future Cannabis Project and moving forward on Friday nights with you guys, now I have fucking four children. So, I mean, it's just like things are multiplying over here. Technically, I have two businesses now, you know, so things are growing, things are expanding. We're international brands. And I think from a standpoint, I couldn't be more grateful to the two of you, to Kevin, to the community, especially in the early days, to Layton, to Peter, to all the people that were kind of just wanting to somehow find a connection, especially in those weird times. I would say, like, what was that? Maybe February of 2020. I felt like the world was closing in, and it seemed very scary because nobody was telling us the truth about potentially the lethalness of what was happening. So just happy that for whatever reason, man, shit shut down. And the ones that were able to find connection on the internet somehow were able to teach each other. And now here we are years later, and you're seeing the fruit of that. And that's why it took so long to say all that, is because you guys can see it in real time. Things have changed for a lot of people in the early Living Soil community. The four of us, when we first started, which included Kevin over here, we didn't have businesses even, what would that be, like 4 years ago. So a lot of the insights and stuff are relatively new. And I think that's something to be said, man. Those are the receipts. The receipts are there, being able to grow plants without deficiencies. And that's kind of what, what horizontal soil represents.
Exactly. Time is money, too. So you know how it is, man. 3 hours is 3 hours. And y'all get to do it. Y'all get to have it for free. You know what I'm saying? So people out there that are tuning into this kind of stuff, you know, appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? Because like, me, like, regardless if I do a show or if you don't even see me, I'm always going to grow. I've been growing. I always hold the torch for the grower. And I want you to see me as that guy that I'm for the grower, man. Does your favorite talking head out there even grow? You know, that's my thing. I'm going to get a t-shirt. Does this dude even grow? You know what I mean? So, like, I took a concept Leighton had and an idea, because at the time, I don't know if he grew cannabis that way at the time when he even came up with it, but it all clicked to me and it made sense to me and I ran with it. And that horizontal living soil, man, it just, the proof is in itself. You know, I'm going on year three. This is the bedding for my YouTube video. I've done probably six, seven cycles in it at least. On my other beds, I'm perpetual, so I'm running cycles. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's like, I did cycles. Well, damn, I'm doing cycles because I'm perpetual, and that adds your cycles quicker. And if you ever want to be a better grower faster, run perpetual, because you're going to hit issues faster. You're going to hit harvest faster. You're going to have to dry more. You're going to have to get in a good rhythm on everything you're doing. So that's it. I ain't going to preach no more.
You're going to crush that ego, because you're going to get two good flips at the beginning and think you're, oh, man, why does everybody say this shit so hard?
Exactly.
All right, Mark, you want to close this out here, brother?
Yeah, well, you know, just for starters, you know, the Brian and Marco show for me put my business on the map. You know, the impact that it had on my business, just on being at a ground level. And, you know, Marco, I think you reached out to me and 3 hours unscripted. Holy crap, that's a daunting task, and we try to keep it to like an hour and a half, for the reason that is such a hard, tall mountain to climb week after week with such consistency. And you guys were a huge part of my life for 2 years, you know, when I had a little kid trying to learn more about, you know, regenerative agriculture was really what I was interested in. And that would seem like it was always kind of like a centering kind of point for the show. It was a lot of the guys that you had, either they had good information to offer about life, or they had good information. And honestly, I like, after seeing so many people on the show, I say that, but I'm like, I think it was you guys. like you guys were the ones that had the stuff to offer about life. And so like having the opportunity to meet both of you in person, Brian, we've gotten together several times now, but meeting Marco, meeting Brian at Brian's wedding, these boys are exactly the people that they portray themselves to be, which is, you know, a testament to integrity. It's a beautiful thing to be able to look at somebody on a screen and then see them in the face, be able to shake their hand, share a bowl, and mm-hmm. talk to them the same exact way that you would. I love how true you guys are, and that's why it's such an honor to be a part of the movement. I don't even want to say I'm like carrying the torch on or anything like that, because I want you to be more a part of the, as much a part of the show as you want to be, Marco, because I think that you have a lot to offer to this community. And Brian, I mean, I have no idea how you do what you do with four kids, man. And then you show up, turn the light on, and do the show, this show now. You know, at your time, 7 o'clock. I only have two kids, and I turn the lights on at 9 and do the show. And you know, I just have no idea how you do it. So my hat's completely off to you for your continued consistency in wanting to share information with this community as well. It's such an honor to be part of this platform and to keep the ball moving forward. I think all four of us on the show tonight, including Kevin, who's not on right now, but we're all part of the Matt Powers Our Soil regenerative soil free, 100% free conference that's going on next week. So please check out r-soil.com. And, you know, you can always support us at MI Beneficials. Marco's been a great customer. Brian sells our products, you know, on a commercial and wholesale level. And just love you guys, man. I really do. It's been a great show. Great amount of information. I want to shift my whole bug operation over and grow a horizontal bed. right next to it, because it gets me excited again, dude.
It's something that gets you excited again. I like that fire for sure, man. Try it in one. At least, you know what I mean? Got to try one. And I'm running that, and I know we got to roll, but you guys are on that bioactive tip. I'm running the horizontal in my box turtle enclosure. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's my dairy cow bins. That's what I'm trying to get at, man. And then you almost come to a microcosm way with the smaller and smaller bins. If it's
right,
super high end cubars, they got to be closer together. Dairy cows have obviously got to have a lot of room, or they're going to eat each other. Or like Marco was saying, Debo, where they're going to steal each other's nutrients. And to be fair, I will sometimes have fun being high, running downstairs, take two huge dairy cows, put a bee pollen in the middle, and then see which motherfucker takes it. They don't like fight to the death or anything. I'm not trying to be like.
Yeah, I get you,
but it's fun to see them. Yeah, man, it's like seeing two brothers like wrestle over an ice cream cone. Bee pollen is the shit in the microbial world. It's obviously next level.
Well, and even in the springtails, I mean, my cultures are even smaller than the cultures that you're talking about, Brian. You know, some of my cultures are 6 ounce containers. And I do that on purpose because I can keep that climate tight. But to be able to have the problem I have in those cultures is the waste. Like there is a waste when you have, you know, a monoculture, which is people want to buy a monoculture of springtails even, right? So like the epiphany I'm coming to at this point is like monoculturing springtails is tough because they leave behind a specific waste that there's nothing there to clean up after them, even them, right? So this is where the cycle, the you know, those smaller organisms that people
are LAB like, oh, will clean up.
Well, you, well, yeah, you know, you can, and you're right, but like LAB also, you
clean it up.
But you're talking about like, you know, cultures with lots of these precious tropical organisms in them. So it's right. That's something that I'm definitely going to be implementing, or like even just like going a step further with like a little bit of EM, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But that again, like it's a testament to the diversity and the cycle of the whole, the culture is like that monoculture has issues too. Right. Mm-hmm. They run into issues over time. So years of culturing by themselves, they don't break down the waste. They have issues as well. So I don't know what the point of that was,
deep.
But
it's deep.
But yeah, I'm thinking horizontal. Deep.
Yeah.
He gets all stoned. Sarah is smoking smoke. Yeah, this is fun, man. Show. This is it's hard to be passionate about something and be able to also find monetary gain so you can continue to be passionate about something. And I think cannabis farming is one of those things that you can learn from a variety of things to grow better food, improve your overall health in general so that you feel better. Because I would also say, man, in 2020, I was eating these moon pies. You ever eat that shit back in the day,
Marco? I used to love moon pies back in the day.
I was always told that's white trash food. So, that's some stuff where part of my family is from, where you have the moon pies and you have a Mountain Dew and you're fucking... Mm. So anyway, I'm eating that because I think it's the end of the world. And I think believing that kind of stuff is very detrimental to men. You know, because you're supposed to be the leader of that. And I have found that the fasting and all these things that we've talked about over the years, that's also what I want to give credit to, is if you're able to kind of just stop eating the junk for a while, your body's going to remember what it feels like to feel good. And from there, I think you're able to sit back and come up with a better idea, or maybe to improve something, or find a better contact. So the cannabis isn't necessarily like, you always have to deal with a lot of people. That was my biggest thing, is I hated dealing with like 20 people. I just want to deal with like 5 people, try to rotate that. Somebody who wants to not work with us or whatever, all right, let's find another aspect. I think that goes in business now too. It's fun to see that a lot of people value like reviews and all of that. Like you, Mark, you put me on that. So that's what I mean, man. We've all learned so much from one another that it's, you know, today is, I guess, the receipt day. So. Check us out. Check out our websites and stuff. You can do all of that too. None of us had this especially pre 2020, right? I'm speaking truth right there, right? Marco, did you have you might have had your website before 2020, huh?
No, I had construction businesses. I microbes and gardening shit, that just started when Instagram started.
All right.
But yeah.
So that's what I was trying to get at. For whatever reason, man, that COVID thing created a lot of different shifts in life too for a lot of people. It felt scary at one point, and now, so if you're thinking of being an entrepreneur, man, I don't know how to say it anymore. Like, if you're really driven, you can learn how to make an e-commerce website. And then once you do that, it's all about what they're now, everyone's calling earned media, you know, going out there and earning that shit so that people want to listen to you speak and your brand. And that's something that, again, why Marco, you know, in the early days, we were talking about just interviewing these people. And because it was a 3-hour conversation, man, I feel like you were able to guide a lot of that with the deeper questions. And so, again, hats off to you that, because there's not a lot of people that have the same mind as Leighton. And I don't want to say that any of us do, but I will say that your experience and you being in the trenches and all of that stuff, and then explaining it just to even a little bit better, in my opinion, so that we can, I guess, trust the process is also what Leighton would always talk about. So it was like we had him as the guiding light for trust the process. And then we got to see you in the trenches. So it was almost like in the trenches. I think, I hope a lot of people will see that that's where the little spark, or whatever you want to say, grew from a 2020 time frame.
No doubt.
So real quick before we sign off here, guys, little housekeeping. Next week we've got Andy from Great Lakes Grease coming on, who is a living, breathing, walking regenerative farmer here in Michigan. He's actually in like northern Michigan, and the amount of heirloom genetics that he runs as far as produce goes is absolutely incredible. He's a guy that I believe, from the stories that I've been told, he sleeps outside 365 days a year here in Michigan, in tents and, other sorts of temporary structures and whatnot, but just on his land. So just a guy that lives on the land, really unique perspective to this whole thing. So I'm really excited to talk with him. The week after that, we've got Johnny coming on from Mindfully Rooted. He's going to be dropping some updates about his Pacific Northwest roots now that he's shifted from down south, and I believe he was in SoCal, moving.
Yeah, he's in my opinion, early, maybe in the earlier days, San Diego. Yes, but he's also one of those, at the same time with Marco, and as then it went into Kevin, somebody that was giving information for free. And that's what I respect.
Yes, just another guy. If you look back on his Instagram, just the amount of information, and if you look at when he's sharing this information, it was at a time when it was really, really needed. So super impactful guy in this community, and just an honor to have Johnny coming on from Mindfully Rooted. The week after December 6th, we've got Chasa from Terraganics coming on to talk about EM. And just how to kind of take that a step further in your regenerative program.
And they're like a large commercial side of things. So I think they would give like a kind of a more insightful view compared to the home grower's perspective.
Yeah, and as my understanding is the company just changed ownership hands. So, they went on this big kind of like this big push, a marketing push, where they were like really going hard there for a while. And they've taken kind of a step back on their approach, where they're really trying to connect now more with like regenerative, or, traditional farmers thinking about going regenerative, and how EM can really help with, amplifying that nutrient cycle. So actually using the nutrients on your land, using defoliation, making amendments from these inputs. Just a cool perspective. And again, like we bring these people on so that you guys can ask questions to them. So if any of these topics strike your mind, load those questions up and get them ready for these weeks to come, because we really want to hear from you guys. Marco, love you, my man.
Thanks,
a pleasure. You're always welcome back, and we'll definitely have him back here soon. And until next week, guys, stay regenerative.
Keep growing.
Keep growing, baby.